Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? Come in, sit down. Yeah, pull up a chair there, make yourself a cup of tea. If you want to tell us anything that's going on in your life, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Or if you've comment about anything that we say, or anybody else says on the programme between now and 4:30 today. Coleman Nochter will be with us. Coleman is a very good child and adolescent psychotherapist. And he gives advice to parents, mainly, about parenting issues. And if you are one of those parents who has an ongoing issue in your life with your teenager or your seven-year-old or whatever, it could be about homework, it could be about sleeping, it could be about eating, it could be about bullying or anything like that, and you want Coleman's advice, get them into us now, ray@rte.ie, and Coleman will be with us after 4:00 today. We were watching again at home, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. I think it's going to be a humdinger this year. Part of it is because Ant and Dec are so happy to be out of Wales. They're not saying it, but they're so ecstatic. You can see it in every smile, every gesticulation of their hands, everything. They're just so happy to be out of Wales and back in Australia. That's one part of it. And of course, the lineup is good. And in particular, I'm like Boy George, and I know we played the song yesterday. He's just so funny and he's so relaxed. You know his story, like he'd really bad addiction story, really bad addiction problems. And then he's come out the other side and he does meditation, and there were had to sleep on some isolated island off the coast of Australia, and he meditated for 2 hours underneath the stars and he thought it was wonderful. And then last night their first challenge was in a torpedo tube, and they increased the water, and of course there was less and less space to breathe, and again he was like zen-like meditating and didn't take anything out of him anyway. And he's just very funny. Every line is a funny one, so I'm really enjoying him, and it's good crack. Anyway, the thing that I noticed last night, apart from all of that, the ads, and I was listening to Morning Ireland again this morning, the ads, like it's Christmas, lads, isn't it? I know, it's Christmas. And I was watching them last night and I was going, they're advertising turkey and ham. Like, who does somebody buy a turkey now and put it in the freezer? Surely they don't. Are turkeys even available? Like, why? What is the point of showing you a big, lovely roast turkey with ham on the 7th or 8th of November? It doesn't make sense to me. Now, obviously, they've done their research. The people who advertise and spend money putting ads on Virgin Media One or RTE One or whatever. And they know that it works. Or maybe they're building up this pent-up Christmasness inside us. So eventually when we do splurge, it'll be big. It'll be big. Then we'll buy 5 turkeys instead of one. But the other thing I noticed last night, there was an ad, Balsam Hill Christmas trees. They're not fake Christmas trees, ladies and gentlemen. They're artificial. You don't call them fake, you call them artificial. And if you're really posh, you go artificial. No, it's not a fake Christmas tree, it's an artificial one. Anyway, these are high-end ones. And it shows you with a flick of a button. They come with the lights already on them. Flick of a button, you can turn it any colour you want. And then there was a little bit at the end where I saw this lady, she appeared to be flipping the Christmas tree as if it was, you know, folded over. And then the ad was over. So desperately tried to find it, and eventually I found the website. And that's what happens. You store it in a bag in two halves. The bottom has wheels on it, and it has some sort of a lever that you hit with your foot, and the bottom half of the tree springs into position. And then you open up the other bag and the top part of the tree fits on, and all the lights are there, and it looks amazing. And they have ones up to 8 feet tall. And you're thinking, yeah, that's what I want. That's what I want. And there is a debate. And I know we're in the middle of COP27. There's a huge debate, which is better for the environment, the real tree or the artificial tree, the artificial tree. Because you could get 10, 15 years out of an artificial tree. I don't know. It's a debate that's ongoing. Anyways, you look at this and you're going, yeah, I'll have one of those. Look at it. Oh, it's so brilliant. Look at it. It's amazing. And you go online and you look at it and they're on offer. And how much? How much would you think? Well, the most expensive one is going to set you back £1,700. Like, come on. £1,700. How much is that in euro? You're up there. Anyway, there must be a market for them, or why would they be paying to advertise in the middle of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here on a Monday night on Virgin Media One? But there at Balsam Hill, you should just to see the foldy bit. Just to see the foldy bit. You'll be intrigued by that. And if anybody has a Balsam Hill foldy up All lights, all singing, all dancing, Christmas tree. Do let us know. 51551. Sad to see, although he a good age, as they say down the country, 98, Leslie Phillips. The death has been announced of British actor Leslie Phillips. And would you know him? You do. You would know him. Yes. Harry Potter and Carry On. And best known for his Ding Dong and Well Hello and I Say catchphrases. He does them a lot better because they're his. He wooed a new generation of fans as the voice of the Sorting Hat in Harry Potter films. So he never actually appeared on screen. He was the voice of the Sorting Hat. He starred in over 200 films, TV and radio series over his glittering career. 98's a great age, isn't it? He was best known for his roles as the smooth-talking rogue with an eye for the ladies in the Carry On. Imagine if they showed Carry On movies now. And Doctor comedy films from the 1950s and 60s. And he had those catchphrases. And there was a BBC documentary I remember seeing about him. And it was about, you know, his life. And he talked about the fact that he was well known for catchphrases. The late Leslie Phillips.
I've gone through life creating catchphrases. It's a punishment, in a way, for playing parts and using a kind of catchphrase. I have enjoyed myself with hello. I breathe it out, you see.
Hello, Mr. Newhouse.
Hello. Pretty well everything I ever did, I only opened my mouth and it became a catchphrase. I mean, Ding Dong was one.
Hello, chaps.
Mr. Bell.
Ding Dong, you're not wrong.
So innocent. Hello. Hello. That's the late Leslie Phillips. May he rest in peace. Blindly. This is a new dating app which works via the absence of photos. This is becoming a trend now. This isn't the first dating app that's been using this approach. So what you do is it hosts a 3-minute blurred video and you do your pitch, you know, but nobody can see you. They can hear your voice. You can tell them about your hobbies, your interests, what you're looking for in a partner, maybe tell a joke or whatever, but they don't see you. And the idea, of course, is that it doesn't want shallow people who just go after looks. It wants people who are, you know, beautiful inside. And you can tell that from a blurred image on a 3-minute video. So that's blindly. Blindly. The other thing that caught our attention today, you like a public vote, and we're good at it here because we can mess people up. You know, when they're asking for the best song ever and a nation once again won, you know, and you have to be careful when you ask the audience and the public to vote. In Australia, they asked people to vote for a name for the new museum in Perth. Now, this was a big deal. It was a big campaign. They sent packs out to schools. They'd advertising on all across all platforms. That's what they say, across all platforms. And things, you know, things have gone horribly wrong. I remember they were looking for a name for a research ship. I think it was the National Environmental Research Council or somebody like that. And the name that won the public suggestion thing was Boaty McBoatface. You see, they didn't like that because it's not treating the thing seriously. And they declined the name Boaty McBoatface. And they went instead with the RRS Sir David Attenborough, which is a lovely name and shows respect for the man who's done so much for the environment over the years. So I don't know if they heard that story down in Australia, but they decided to ask the public for suggestions for the name for a new museum in Perth. And some of them were the Sparkling Museum of Perth. That's not bad. The Victoria Drummond Museum, very posh. So they got loads and loads of entries, and they narrowed it down to a short list as they do, and people sat around a big boardroom table and they went through them all, and they came up with a name for the new museum in Perth. And it is, after all that, sending out packs and campaigns, probably spent millions on it. And the name is Perth Museum. Perth Museum. It's like, I remember we followed this back in the day, about 10 years ago. Somebody had a bright idea in New Zealand that they'd look for a different flag. I can't remember the context of why they were looking for a different flag. So they decided again, they'd do a public campaign, schools, all that, design a new flag for New Zealand. That was the thing. Design a new flag for New Zealand. Loads, hundreds of entries from children and artists and all the graphic designers, all sorts of people. And they had to include the existing one, the black one with the leaf and all that. They had to include that. and then they narrowed it down to 5, and then there was actually a referendum on it. And what happened at the end? They voted for the one that was there already. Anyway, that caught our attention today. 515-51 ray at rte.ie. I told you about Coleman Nocturne, didn't I? Yeah. And there. Right, we'll tell you about the quiz in a moment. And let's see what you're saying on text. I'll bet you Boy George won't last in the jungle. Marie, I think he will, Marie. Do you know what I think? That people might vote him out because they won't vote for him to do the challenges because he's too zen, he's too relaxed. It won't take anything out of him. And maybe the people at home might go, he's just boring. And they might vote him out for that reason. I don't know. Why in this day and age are you watching the ads, John? Well, it's terrestrial television, John. I've no choice. If you're watching it live, you have to watch the ads. I got a Balsam Hill tree last year. It comes in 3 parts with lights, etc. 6 foot. We love it. It's very heavy if you're storing it in the attic. It's big as well. It doesn't fold up that well. Like, we've an artificial tree at home. I kid you not, when we went to buy in the first place, I said, can I see your selection of fake trees? And he said, we like to call them artificial here, not fake. Anyway, I bought one of them, and that's about 12 years ago or so. And you take all the branches off and it goes into a box and perfect for the attic. But this one, this Balsam Hill fold-out thing, it's quite bulky, even in its folded-up state. Anyway, we will tell you about the quiz in a moment. But first, well done to the Eurythmics. They've been inducted into the Rock and Roll House Hall of Fame. It's the Hall of Fame, and The Edge did it over the weekend. He probably was a bit, his nose was out of joint because Bono was getting all the attention. So he said, let me do that. Let me induct the Eurythmics into the Hall of Fame. So Annie Lennox and Dave Stewart, they've been doing what they do for 40 years. And before Eurythmics, and music fans will know this, they were in a band called The Tourists. I don't know why they changed their name. And they had a hit with I Only Want to Be With You, wasn't it? Which was a cover of a 60s hit, I think. Anyway, they performed on Saturday night at the induction, and they performed Missionary Man, Sweet Dreams, and Would I Lie to You? And just to signpost the fact that they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, we have 3 of their songs here, and they can vote outside which they want to hear. Do you want to hear? Number 1, Sweet Dreams Are Made of This. Do you want to hear? Thorn in My Side, or do you want to hear? 3 great songs, but which do you want to hear? It's 3, it's 1, it's 1, it's 2. So what's 1 gets it, doesn't it? 1 gets it, yes, 1 gets it. Yeah, just, yeah, yeah. 515-51, ray at rte.ie. Good afternoon. Sweet Dreams Are Made of This. The Eurythmics, Sweet Dreams Are Made of This. On RTÉ Radio 1, on a Tuesday afternoon, 515-51 or ray at rte.ie. Our free-range turkey went into the freezer last Saturday. There you go. You don't know how other people live their lives. No worries about bird flu here. Our artificial Christmas tree is on its 20th year this year, says Kieran. And Sandra, that's how it's spelled here, Sandra as opposed to Sandra. Hi Ray, I bought a 7-foot frosted Fraser fir Balsam Hill last year. And yes, you're right about them being expensive, but they're so realistic and beautiful quality. High end, they're high end there, but you're paying for the quality. We looked up a few articles there to see if anybody has a definitive answer on whether the artificial tree or the real tree is better for the environment. And it's ongoing. It's ongoing. There's no definitive answer. So if you have one, do let us know. 51551 ray at rte.ie. Do you know what I was nearly going to do? I was nearly going to... Where has it gone there? I was nearly going to press that there. There, look. That nearly happened. Anybody recognise that? No? Good. Because that was, I had a Christmas song lined up there and I nearly pressed it by accident. I don't know why I had it on the cart wall, but it's there. Instead, I'll tell you about our quiz. Here we go. So, we're looking for 2 people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer 3 questions on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And there is a prize, a great prize this week. It's a 2-night stay for 2 people in any one of the iNewa Collection 4-star hotels, and they have them all over the place. The Chic Hibernian Hotel in Kilkenny, Tullamore Court Hotel in Tullamore, obviously, the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, Fairways Dundalk, or any one of the Radisson Blu hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. There's something for everyone to enjoy, from overnight getaways and spa treatments to elegant afternoon tea or a delicious meal in one of the many restaurants across the iNUA collection. The choice is yours. iNUA.ie, that's iNUA.ie. Okay, on this Tuesday afternoon, here is your qualifying question. I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here is back on our screens. Can you name the double act presenting the show? Is it Anton Deck or Foster and Allen? Hey! So I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here is presented by Anton Deck or Foster and Allen. 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925. And we could be talking to you after 4 o'clock.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Leslie Phillips made a film here in Wicklow called The Other Eden in 1959, says John. I saw him at the time. And somebody else says, we brought our Christmas tree home from Boston 22 years ago and it looks good, like we bought it yesterday. So there you go. Now, Twitter's in disarray and people are jumping ship and moving to other social media sites. We have Aoife Barry on the line. She's assistant news editor with The Journal to tell us all about this. How are you doing, Aoife?
Not too bad. How are things?
I'd say you're a big user of Twitter.
Yes, rather embarrassingly, my username on it is SweetOblivion26, and 26 was the age I was when I joined Twitter, and I'm so far from 26 now. That tells you how long ago I've been on.
Would that be 16 years?
No. Oh, it'd be a very long time. Well, less than 16, we'll say, but no, not in my 40s yet.
How old is Twitter?
So Twitter is around, I think it's about 12
years
old.
Oh, 12 years old. Okay. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So yeah, it hasn't been going 16 years, but I joined in about, I think, 29, 2010 or thereabouts. But, you know, it's been going for a long time. I mean, it took a little while for it to become the behemoth that it's been over the last number of years, but it became one of those sites like Facebook that inserted itself into our world, really, yeah. Didn't it? It went beyond the MySpace, beyond the Bebo, and became this huge kind of juggernaut, even though it didn't always make a lot of money.
But it's odd because you mentioned Bebo and MySpace there, but they're consigned to history now. So,
yeah.
You know, so things can be consigned to history. We think they're all present and we can't do without them. But, you know, Bebo, MySpace.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many people are on Twitter?
Sure. So you have about 230 million people who are like the active daily users on Twitter.
Okay.
So there's a lot of people on it. I mean, it's one of the maybe top three biggest social media sites in the world. Or you've got like Facebook, you've got Twitter, you've got TikTok, which is like the juggernaut coming through the whole thing. Everybody is very, very envious of TikTok in the social media world. So it's got millions of people on it. I mean, it's an interesting one because it's become really, really powerful. But unlike Facebook and Meta, it wasn't always making a lot of money. They can never kind of quite kind of monetize it enough to make it really valuable, which is why Elon Musk taking over Twitter is so interesting, because he's claiming that he will start to kind of make it the money that it needs.
Because it's losing, he says, 4 million a day.
Yes, he claims it is.
Which is an awful lot of money. The first thing he has done, which happened over the weekend, is that you can now pay for the much sought after blue check verification. Now tell people about the blue check verification who don't know about it.
Yeah, so he's kind of switched the meaning of it a little bit, right? So before, like, I've got a blue tick verification on Twitter. I know. And it's because I work for The Journal, not because of anything very special. But it basically tells people, like, I am Aoife Barry. I work for thejournal.ie. This is me. I had to, I think, provide identification of some kind, but I definitely had to be verified through my employment as to who I am. And I have to log in with a specific email address and everything. So it's all done in a specific way. And it basically tells people, if you have a blue tick, this is who the person is. So you can trust who they are. Because when Twitter started off, there was people pretending to be every celebrity you can think of, DMing people saying, you know, I'm Oprah Winfrey, you know, when they certainly weren't. So Twitter had to bring this verification in, and it also gives a layer of like trust, you know, you can kind of generally trust people who have that blue tick. But Elon Musk wants to bring in this thing now, it's called Twitter Blue, which would mean that verification is actually open to way more people. It won't have the layers that you need to go through to actually get verified.
And can I just ask you, Aoife, did you have to earn it? You know, is there any sense of earning it through something?
Yeah, like I know back when I got mine, it was definitely because of the job I had and because I'm a journalist.
Yes, okay,
you know, so it was
okay.
Saying, right, these people, they're either celebrities or they have a certain job. They do something perhaps of note, but they are a person and you need to know who they are. But now it could be that anybody will have it.
And was it transparent how you got it?
Well, let me put it this way. It took a while for it kind of to happen for a lot of people.
Right.
So people would apply for it and it wasn't very transparent that you clicked a button and it was like, here we go, we'll bring you through the process and you're verified. There was a bit of a mystery going on behind the verification.
And there was high-fiving then when you got one.
Yeah, like I think people, you know, I'm happy I have one because it shows people I am who I am.
And
but you know what? I might not have one forever.
I'm trying to establish here that it was much sought after, the blue tick. Yeah, yeah. So now he's selling them. So anybody can have one.
Yeah, and the thing is as well, there's a kind of a conservative viewpoint in the US, you know, capital C maybe, a conservative viewpoint that people who have blue ticks are these kind of liberal people who have like issues with the internet and who want everything shut down and who don't like free speech. So there's this kind of viewpoint, I think, that Elon Musk is maybe sympathetic to, that there is something really negative about having the old form of a Twitter tick. So he's bringing in his own version. And what he's also saying is he's going to change the Twitter algorithm, which is basically kind of what shows you on the, you know, kind of important things on Twitter. And he'll make sure all of these new verified people who pay that $7.99 a month for Twitter Blue will be above everybody else, if you get me. So you'll see all of their stuff first, ahead of all the rest of us plebs who maybe don't have a verification tick.
So I was just doing a bit of maths and I thought there were 450 million people on Twitter. Anyway, but it's taken 250 million. And if you take 1 or 2% of those sign up for this blue tick thing for $8 a month, you're talking about earnings of in the region of, you know, $300 million a year. Like, it's a lot of cash. It's an awful lot of cash. But if you can buy it, it obviously renders it useless nearly, does it?
Well, it kind of shifts the meaning of it, doesn't it? You know, so it now kind of does take away maybe the hierarchy that was set up by the verification tick, you know, and it does maybe democratize it to an extent. But I don't know if paying for something democratizes anything really. But it does put it it's a new viewpoint that you have to have now about this. And it means that I don't think it's going to do what he thinks it's going to do, which is get rid of spam and get rid of bots. What it's going to do is create this strange algorithm where people don't necessarily trust people who are verified in the same way. And you might get maybe people that you don't really like having their stuff pushed up your feed in a way that you're not happy with. So it's going to create some issues for some users, definitely.
So Mastodon, of all the competitors, is the one that's getting the most coverage at the moment. They have how many subscribers?
So they have 1 million daily active users overall. Now, Mastodon's different to Twitter. So this might be a little bit hard to explain in one way, but actually kind of I'll break it down really simply, right? So to my best.
You're so good. Thank you very much.
I know. Well, listen, I have to do this for myself because I'm not a tech nerd. Okay, I'm like anybody else on this. So when you look at Twitter, right, you go log into Twitter. Twitter is one website. You go in, you have an account, you choose who you want to follow and you just, you know, it's all there. There's no separate.
It's pretty
Twitter
straightforward. You tweet something and it's out there to the world. That's it.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's called a centralized website, right? So it's one.
So it's a bit like broadcasting, really, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, whereas you compare what Mastodon is to something like email, right? So it's called a decentralized system. So it has all of these different servers, which are basically, you can think of them as like websites that come under the umbrella of Mastodon. So you join them, separately, and they all have their own little world and they're all their own sites. But because they're also federated, they can connect in with each other. So you can actually see what's happening a bit on those other servers or mention people who are on the other sites and servers, even though you're just on that distinct server that you're a member of.
It's not going to work. Sorry, like even that explanation, and which is very good.
That's
Eva.
Breaking it down very
simply.
Yeah,
I know. But wasn't the beauty of Twitter was its simplicity?
Well, it was, but you know what? Say when I joined Mastodon, I joined it a few days ago, I think at the weekend, to make sure that I could keep my username. When I joined it, I was wondering how complicated it was going to be, right? Because I hadn't joined like a decentralized federated server-based thing before. I had no clue about all this worked, really. Joined it and I was like, oh, okay, this is basically an Irish Twitter, mastodon.ie. You can put in the URL mastodon.ie into your browser on your phone or on your laptop and you'll find this website, and that is basically a Mastodon server and it's for Ireland. It's like Ireland's version of Twitter in a way. And when I went on there, so many people have been joining it now from Twitter. It was basically like being just on Twitter for Irish people.
And what are they saying about Twitter then on Mastodon? What are they saying about Elon Musk on Twitter?
People that, like, let me put it this way, Mastodon.ie had 200 people aroundabouts joined about a week ago and now has 11,000 people joined it.
Wow.
So you've thousands of people who are not happy with Twitter or who want to find out if there's an alternative way of them communicating and connecting online on social media with, you know, that's different. And what I thought was really interesting was that Mastodon to me felt like I spent a lot of time on forums and bulletin boards when I was in college, you know, like about 20 years ago. And this was like going right back to that time. Like, it's a lot smaller. It's a bit simpler. There's no ads. There's no virality. There's no algorithm. It really is this chronological catalog of people talking and interacting. And that's so much simpler than Twitter, which when you go on has got loads of ads and it's got kind of, people call it a hellscape for a reason. Like, there's a lot of negativity on there because it's so big and because there's so many people. But because Mastodon.ie has now moved from having hundreds of members to thousands, they're going to be dealing with all of the issues that come with that, right?
Yes, yeah.
Overnight,
yes.
They have changed completely. So you do see actually a lot of the members of Mastodon.ie discussing those changes in real time, which I think is really interesting too.
Yeah, but I remember when Twitter was launched, I was on the radio and it was so quaint. I said, now, here's the thing then, you get on, you have 160 characters and you just tell people what you're doing. And we invited people to tell us what they were doing via text. And there's this lovely snapshot of Ireland, you know, I'm leaning on the fence looking at the cows. I'm watching my 6-month-old, you know, sleeping, all that. It was lovely. There was something lovely. This, you got a sense of a community connecting. And of course, that changed very quickly and became a cesspit of negativity and horribleness.
The thing is, it was really nice and simple at the start, and it was people reaching out and connecting, finding that all those reasons why the internet was set up, you know, to be this kind of interconnected place where people could start afresh, start this new world. The old rules didn't apply. You could go on there and kind of do whatever you wanted and be whoever you wanted to be. But because Twitter became like Facebook, this essential part of culture, you know, politics, business, arts, everything, it meant that it became more than just a place where we talked about what was going on. And it also meant that with so many people, like, not everybody's a nice person, so not everybody's going to be nice online, and that all happened at once almost. And also the sites could never grapple with content moderation, and that's the big issue. How do you deal with the negativity?
Yeah, in a way Elon Musk might be, you know, I think he could actually do us all a favor. But I explain why. By sort of running Twitter into the ground and giving everybody a voice where you have hate speech, and because he's a free speech absolutist,
he is,
that it might force legislators to introduce real legislation around these social media platforms, which designates them as publishers, where they have to be responsible for their content. And that would change their tune completely. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see if he manages to do that, because there's a big thing really in the US where they have a thing called Section 230, which basically means that the websites and social media sites can't be sued in a civil court for things that are said by their users
and
members.
Which is wrong. Isn't it? I would think it's wrong.
Well, I suppose it was something that came in at a time when the internet was really young and people didn't realise it was going to end up like how Twitter was going to end up.
You also have to remember, Aoife, that the people who lobby on behalf of social media companies like Meta and Facebook, same thing, and Twitter, like, they have an awful lot of money to spend.
You know, billions.
So they're lobbying American politicians to make sure that the status quo remains the status quo.
Well, yeah, and I think you'll also find that the companies frequently say, which is interesting, that, and I know I got this in a statement to a story that I did once, that, you know, they would prefer that the governments brought in rules and then they will, you know, abide by those rules, because they don't want to be the ones who always set all the rules. So, you know, they have certain aims that they want, and also they make a lot of money. They, you know, at the same time...
Yeah, but sure, look, the drinks company have drinkaware.ie, you know, it's just lip service really, isn't it?
Well, I think that, like, you know, at the end of the day, Facebook or Meta or Twitter are going to do whatever is going to benefit them. You know, there's money to be made from ads, and they want to keep people clicking in. They want to keep the members there. I mean, there was big issues caused when Apple changed things where it means you can't be tracked on different apps anymore. And that immediately affected how much social media companies could make from ads. So, you know, that shows what exactly went into advertising, us being tracked along all the different websites we visit every day.
I saw a thing about, what's your man's name, Tate, is it? He's a horrible individual. Andrew Tate. And he was giving advice to his followers that you do posts that attracts your fans, but also attracts the haters.
Exactly.
Because that's the thing. When people don't agree with you, they'll want to see what you're saying. And there are the people who agree with you as well. And that's how a lot of algorithms work.
That's the thing. I mean, the algorithms don't necessarily always balance out who's looking at something for what reason. So, for example, if you're on TikTok and you look at a video and you don't really like what the video is showing you, but it is showing you something that you're curious about, yes, and you watch the whole thing, it will continue serving you that sort of content.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how you survive out there at all.
keep them going. It's all very interesting. But I mean, we'll see, you know, whether Mastodon will take over, whether we will return to the days of old or whether things will still be barreling down.
So will Twitter be consigned to the same place where Bebo and MySpace is, or will it survive? What do you think?
I think it's trickier to put Twitter in the bin simply because of the amount of power it's managed to gain and that we've given it. But I do think it's going to have serious challenges if Musk continues down the free speech road, because, like you say, that could end up with everything collapsing into itself. If people don't believe Twitter is relevant, then Twitter will stop being relevant. But if it retains any relevance at all and there's not that kind of critical mass over in Mastodon, then you're just going to see the same things happening really on there.
And as you know well from what you do, people move on very quickly, don't they?
Yeah, completely. We get bored, you know. Yeah. We get bored. We love novelty, but we get bored very easily. So, you know, keep it novel with the negativity in a way too.
Okay. Aoife Moore, assistant news editor at thejournal.ie. Aoife Barry. Sorry about that. Aoife Barry, assistant. Who's Aoife Moore?
Assistant Aoife Moore, news. Sunday Times. Yeah.
There you go. Assistant news editor with thejournal.ie. Thanks very much, Aoife. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We're going to talk about walking football. Walking football, yes. We've Paul Comiskey. How are you, Paul?
I'm very good.
And we've Kieran Darcy. How are you doing, Kieran?
Hello.
They're panned. They're panned in some way there on the headphones. Maybe it's not outside. Good to have you, lads.
Great.
Yeah.
Great to be here.
Now, Paul, you set up walking football in Dublin because you were watching Sky one day. And you saw what?
I saw this game of older people playing, slowed down, and I thought, okay, this has to be here. And it wasn't really. There was a few games going on, but there was only six and eight fellas there, and I started getting other guys involved, and we built it up a little bit,
right,
where we were getting good five-a-side, six-a-side games going.
So the rules are?
The rules are non-contact and no running.
On a sort of an astro sort of five-a-side or
you
on
could
grass?
Play it anywhere. We've been on grass, we've been on astro, where sort of grass is sort of finished at the moment now till probably next March again. But anything that is a football pitch.
Okay. And it was set up to cater for players who had got to a certain age, who if they had to turn to defend, they got dizzy. That sort of
no, we're not that bad.
You're looking at father telling you. That's right. No.
No.
I'm saying that because it happened to me once. No, but it's for men and women of a certain age.
It is technically, I don't think we should be stopping. We've got professional footballers and all, and I think 35 years of age, they're gone.
Right.
You know, Ronaldo there is an enigma that he's still there at 37 and 38. But the thing is that if you equalise it and have other people, like if that's where over 35s football came in. This is what amazed me about walking football. How did it take so long to get to this? Because we've lost lots of people. I'm getting fellas playing now who haven't played for 20 years. That if it'd come up 20, 30 years ago, they would have just done
playing.
That instead I'm stopping now at 45.
So it's walking, that's straightforward. Mm. The no contact thing. So how do you dispossess a person who has the ball?
He's telling you lies.
There is contact here.
There is.
No.
It's minimal.
I mean, it's very minimal. I mean, it's about letting the ball do the work. Because number one is with the game slowed down a little bit, it actually removes a bit of that contact anyway.
Yeah.
See, what happens is, where will you make contact with me in a game is when I'm running past you or something.
And momentum. If
that momentum is taken out.
Fine. Now, Kieran, your story, because you were unlucky with COVID. You got a bad dose.
I came back from the brink.
Yeah. How many days were you in hospital?
I think it was 8 weeks.
Right. Wow.
How
close were you to the brink?
The light was shining.
Right.
And that's how close I got.
And were people called? Were people told to
get around? Yeah, I was told the 12 hours at the most in the Mater Hospital. And I was texting, goodbye, you know. My dad says, What were you thinking of? I thought I gave her my bank account number, the bank card number.
It's funny now.
I had a few bob hidden in the line in my wallet, and I told her where that was. So
Yeah, it was serious.
It was frightening.
How many children have you got?
I have six.
Right.
So
no, you're still here. You said you had six. You have six.
I have six.
You're alive, which is brilliant. But here's the thing: when you get it bad like that, and you're so close to death, it knocks your confidence.
It knocks. I buried my sister Mary on the Saturday, and 4 days later I was in the Mater Hospital, and I said, "Dad, look, it's only COVID. You know, I'll be home in a day or two." And then you're told you've double pneumonia and you've COVID.
Right.
And you're brought up the stairs and these big thick plastic screens are around you. There's pipes hanging down. And I remember saying to the nurse, like, I don't want to be here. I said, I'm going home. She said, it's here or nowhere at this stage.
Yeah. And so you did get home eventually after eight weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
But you were a shadow of your former self.
Oh, yeah, completely.
You took to the chair with the walking stick.
Took to the chair. Yeah. I didn't want to go out. I eventually tried to walk and I was getting on the loos and getting off the loos. And after 2 minutes of standing against walls and trying to get my breath, I had no muscles in my legs. They were gone. They said in the matter, I think I lost about 60% of my muscle tone.
Yeah, yeah. And Margaret's your partner. Is it Mary or Margaret?
Mary, sorry.
I'm not good on names today for some reason. So Mary's your partner. She heard Paul on the radio talking about walking football.
Yeah.
And she says to you, that's something you should do.
Wasn't exactly like that. Right, there's other words for it. But they,
get up off here.
I was watching Man United the night before and I was screaming at the television. And she said, you can't go on like this. You're sitting there, you're depressed. I was clear. And the next morning I was getting dressed, the phone, she was, I came out and she said, the phone, what was going on? I said, there's somebody on the phone wants to talk to you. And I said, who? And he said, how are you? He said, Paul Cummins get here from walking football. I said, do I know you? He said, no. But he said, I'll know you very short. You're being sent up.
All right. So, there's no choice.
I said, no, it's not for me. I was totally, totally exhausted. I was tired. Anything that was wrong with you, I had it. I was just, I wanted, preferably if I'd have died, I would have been better off because I wouldn't have had all these problems afterwards. But I went up and Paul says, how are you? And I'm standing there with a walking stick. And he says, this is walking football. And I'm standing the goal with the walking stick. And the first week he said, are you not? You know, you're not getting involved in this. And I said, I'm tired. I'm lethargic. I'm just totally, everything was going wrong. And he said, well, you come up the following week. So I went up the following week and he said, come on, try to get stuck in. So I threw the walking stick behind the goal and I'm standing there and the ball came up the wing and it went into the net. And he says, this is making effort, like, you know, try. So a few minutes later, he came up the far wing and put the ball into the left wing, into the left side of the goal. Right. Now, at this stage, the ball is looking like it's spinning backwards. You know, running on the grass and the ball, and I could see it coming to the line and coming. And I said, this is not for me. Like, you know, and something gave me such a kick in the arse that my two legs went up in the air and I dived right across the goal and caught the ball on the line. Now, at this stage, I'm looking at the grass and what in the name is, are you doing here? And your head's down looking at the grass and saying, you're 68 years of age. What are you doing? You know, you're crazy, man. You're, you know, and listen, nobody would ever believe you. So all, that was all in a few seconds. And then him and Noel Cochran pulled me up by me top. Yeah. And he said, "What's wrong with you?" And I said, "Nothing." He said, "We thought you were dead." I said, "Like, you put the ball underneath and you didn't move after that." So it was,
and that moment, and it sounds like a Roy of the Rovers
that
moment.
Was boom.
That changed everything for you.
The whole thing changed.
And then you had a lovely moment down in Ace, because people of a certain age will know your brother's name.
Yeah.
Eamon Darcy.
Eamon, Sheila.
Who did he play for? Sheila was his nickname.
Sheila was his nickname. Yeah. Dundalk, Oldham Athletic in the Old English First Division. Shamrock Rovers. He made history with them with playing the 57 European Cup against Manchester United in Old Trafford and in Dublin. And he, that was his night to shine, and he did. But he played, I remember as a child listening to that on the radio when you had to tune in to Athlone.
Yeah.
To get on the radio. Yeah. And we had those famous men, you might remember him, Philip Green.
Oh, I do. I do.
Philip and Eamon had this thing, you know, going between them, but, you know, there was a love-hate relationship, okay, I think, but they were getting beat. I think there was 3-2 they got beaten in Old Trafford, and the last one to come out with the ball, the shoot, was Duncan Edwards. And he said, "Here's Duncan Edwards now on the ball, and he's going to put it into the net." And Eamon saved against Duncan Edwards.
Wow.
And I remember my mum...
No, I know this.
No,
is
it's sad. a bit, but
no, because and this I should tell people now, and we should commiserate with you. And you're doing this, you were doing this anyway. But Eamon passed away yesterday.
Yesterday.
Now he was.
He would have been 90 in March.
Okay. So you're doing this in memory of him.
Which
is a lovely thing, and he managed to see you play football.
Yeah.
And that was a big moment for you. That was a big moment for
and
you.
And you were standing behind me with this way.
He came out of the nursing home to coach you.
Yeah, to coach me. Yeah.
So he was in his 80s. You were.
He's in his 90s now. Like he's in his 89. Yeah. I'm in my 70s. I'd be 70. Yeah.
It's brilliant though.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. Like, nobody could write the story, but that night in Old Trafford, we were around the radio, and there was other nights. The next night after that would have been Dalymount. He saved the penalty against England. Now Eamon said, you know, he watched your man secretly a couple of hours before and taking the penalty.
So he knew which way he was going to go.
But at that stage, you had a little flare on one side of the goal, and St. Joseph and St. Anthony in the other side of the goal. So there was more than one person in that goal in those nights.
So he used to bring them with him, did he?
My mother be on her knees. There was one night, the night he did save the penalty, he thought it was Johnny Bourne out of West Ham was taking the penalty, and he was going to plant it in the back of the goal, but Eamon saved it. He saved it with his finger, put it onto the post. And my mother called Philip Green all the names under the sun. God bless, he did save it.
Well, listen, may he rest in peace.
Yeah.
Eamon. Sheila, yeah. Eamon Darcy, yeah. Sheila, people, as I say, of a certain age will know him. And Kieran, what an amazing story. Walking football has changed you.
I
didn't know you beforehand, but you're a confident man, full of life, smiling, like, laughing.
If there was ever a World Cup again,
you're available.
Not at my age, yeah. But to be on the same pitch with Eamon, that was like winning the World Cup.
Yeah. So, and you were that night in Nice.
Yeah. And then a couple of months later, his son came home from, he's in Connecticut. Now he big time with the women football in America, and he's been inducted into the Hall of Fame over there, Michael. And came home at the moment, but Eamon came down the morning that Michael and his daughter arrived, Maeve, and there was Eamon, his son, Maeve and myself on the one pitch playing.
Brilliant.
And, you know,
Paul, you must be very proud when you hear stories like that. And
it does,
and it's all over the country now.
There's lots of places, lots of locations where it's on.
And is there a central website, or can people just find out locally?
Well, I have. There's two. There's Walking Football Ireland, which is a website, but I'm not sure it works so well.
Okay.
And then there's Walking Football Dublin on Facebook, where I'm looking at. And then anybody can call me and I can direct them to where football's on local to them.
But, thanks for coming in.
Can I just say one thing, right? If you're sitting at home, get up off your arse. Get out and play. You don't have to play for 90 minutes. It's a half an hour aside and we do have a water break. You might have a couple of water breaks, but it's just get off the chair.
And it's more than just the physical thing. It's the mental thing, connecting with people, the social thing, having a laugh, having a crack and reliving the dreams.
The only time I get embarrassed is when we're playing with the women and some of them play for Eamon on the women's international team.
Right.
That's he ran them before.
Oh, yeah.
And they're running at me because they play for Eamon. I know, I was seeing what they can do.
Oh, yeah.
And Eamon's in the back of the net, like, you know. And they can't dive like a brother, bro. You're a bit slow.
Well, in memory of the great Eamon Darcy, Sheila, Paul Comiskey, thanks for coming in. Kieran Darcy, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Give it Holly, men's group in Ballina with Coach Pat O'Brien are playing walking football for 5 years plus. Mighty crack. And then a brother of Jack and Bobby Charlton was a walking football international for England, says Martin. His name was Tommy Charlton. He was part of the first over 60s international walking football team at the grand old age of 72. And I was talking to Paul and Kieran before they left there, and there are walking football teams all over the country, so just search them out. I'm sure the local football club would know if there was a walking football club in the locality. I have two artificial trees, one for 30 years and a snow-covered 7-foot tree for 14 years. I feel I've saved a lot of trees, says Teresa. And my parents from Ballybuffet in County Donegal bought an artificial tree when they married in 1962 and has been put up in their house every year since. So 60 years later, still going strong. I feel a challenge coming on. Ireland's oldest Christmas tree. Anish Toshia now in the Preve Skelton and Oak to the Mora de Wallish. Good morning, thank you very much. It's quiz time. We have two quizzers standing by and a prize. And this week, it's a two-night stay for two people in one of the four-star Ainua Collection hotels. And they have them in Kilkenny, the Hibernian Hotel there, Tullamore Court Hotel, Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, the Fairways Dundalk, the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. Ainua.ie. Hello, Durin.
Hello, hiya Ray.
Dirren Bean in Offaly.
That's right, yeah.
Whereabouts in Offaly?
I'm in Edenderry.
Ah, yeah, Edenderry. I know it well.
Good.
Would you say Edenderry is in the bog or on the edge of the bog?
Oh, I'd say the very edge.
The very edge of the bog, yeah. And you're just home from where?
I'm just home from school today.
Right. You work there as opposed to attend as a student.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Right.
Primary or secondary?
I'm primary school, yeah.
And what class?
I have different classes, right, because I fill in for the principals on their admin days.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
That keeps
That's
it interesting.
New keeps, job this year for me.
That keeps it interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
So by the end of the year, you'll know all the pupils in the school, won't you?
Well, in about five schools, yeah. In five classes, anyway.
So you're across different schools.
I am, yeah, across different schools, yeah, just for the whole week, yeah.
Okay, so explain that to me. So if a principal has to do admin work, they give you a shout and you take their class for that day. Is that it?
That's it, yeah, yeah. It's teaching principals I cover.
Right.
And it's all small schools.
And do people like you exist all over the country?
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. I think it's called a cluster and it's in the, it's around all the country, yeah. Yeah, it's so, kind of a new enough job in the last few years.
Aha, so it's a cluster of schools. That's... Would there be other people? I was just thinking there, say, for example, a psychologist who would be attached to a cluster of schools. That would make sense as well, wouldn't it? Where small schools couldn't afford to pay somebody or whatever.
You wouldn't get a psychologist now. No. That's totally different to get, yeah.
You wouldn't get that, no. Okay.
No.
That might be a good idea, but then that means that...
It would be lovely, but...
Yes, it probably isn't going to happen. Okay, who's at home?
We're all at home today. I'm actually out in the car away, hiding away from the noise.
I have
four kids and a husband in there.
Right. And what age are the children?
13, 11, 9 and 5.
Wow, that's a busy house, isn't it?
Yes.
And is he making the dinner this evening?
He is indeed, yeah.
What is it?
it's minced meat, carrots, a bit of sauce and spuds.
You know, this is mad now. This is mad. But I remember from my childhood, because there was nine of us, so my mum had to have a very strict menu. And Tuesdays, yeah, today's Tuesday, was always mince, potatoes and carrots. Isn't that a coincidence?
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
I won't ask you what you're having tomorrow. Okay, you're up against Derek Meehan. It's the Beans versus the Meehans. How are you doing, Derek?
Hi, Ria. How are things?
Say hello to Jaron there.
Hi, Darren. How are you?
Hello, how are you?
Yeah. So, Derek, you're in Sligo. What part of Sligo?
I'm in Dromard.
Right. Is that near Sligo town?
It's about 15 kilometres outside. Aha. On the Ballina Road.
And you're on the way home from work as well. What do you do?
I work in a Kingsbridge Private Hospital here in Sligo.
Right. And who's at home when you get home?
My two kids and my wife.
Yeah. And you've Brandon, 14, and Tegan, age 5.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And Tegan has just started a big school. How's that going for her?
She loves it. She loves it. Absolutely loves it.
Right. I believe she asks for homework.
Yes, I think she's the only pupil that asks for homework. She loves it altogether.
So you as well as the family, you have a bit of a farm at home as well?
We do try a bit, all right. Yeah, we have a few sheep.
A few sheep, okay.
Yeah.
Never ask a farmer how many sheep or cattle he has, so I won't ask you that. Okay.
You're dead right.
You're dead right, okay. So you know the rules, Darren and Derek. Three questions each. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. Go for a shorter clip, you get 2 points. Whoever gets most points is the winner, and if it's drawn points, we will go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Okay, Darren, the year is 2000, 22 years ago, and we're starting at the movies. Would you like a long clip or a short clip?
I'll go along to ease myself in.
Okay. This 2000 movie sees Tom Hanks play a man stranded on an uninhabited island after his plane crashes in the South Pacific. And here is your long clip.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Well, no.
Tom Hanks, in what?
I've got a total blank.
Have you?
All I was thinking of was Wilson, the ball.
Yes, it was a ball. You see, you know it. You can see it.
Oh, jeez, no.
No,
so
not coming, no.
No, it's not coming to me.
You're going to kick yourself. Castaway.
Castaway.
No, it's too late. Sorry, I was
sorry.
Sorry. Sorry, Darren. Okay, Derek, let's see how you do. The year 2000 at the movies. Do you want to go long or short?
I go along if that's
you go along as well. Okay, this film stars Sandra Bullock as a tomboy agent who is asked by the FBI to go undercover as a contestant when a terrorist threatens to bomb a United States pageant. Have a listen.
Describe your perfect date.
It's a tough one. I'd have to say April 25th because it's not too hot, not too cold. All you need is a light jacket.
That's funny. But what's the name of the movie?
Is it Legally Blonde, no?
No, Miss Congeniality.
Yeah.
So, an even start. No points on the board. Back to you, Dern. Second question's on music.
Okay.
From the year 2000, do you want to go long or short?
I'll go long as well, please.
Long as well. This song was another big hit for this band. Have a listen to the clip and see if you can name the band or the song.
The daylight's fading slowly.
Song or band?
The Chorus.
It is the Chorus.
The Chorus.
Breathless. Well done. You have a point on the board. Derek, music from the year 2000. What are you going to do?
I'll try a short.
Aha. Well, look at you. This 2000 hit was the first track on this rock album's 10th studio album. So we need the name of the band or the name of the song.
The heart is a blue. Shoots up through the stone.
Well.
Yeah. You too.
Yes. Beautiful day. Have you seen Bono around at all? I don't know. He's keeping low profile recently. You get 2 points for that. Okay, so it's 1-2. That puts you under pressure, Darren.
Yeah.
You sort of have to go short on this one.
I do, yeah.
You do, yeah. Okay, so it's news and current affairs. In 2000, a certain Irish athlete won silver in the 5,000 metres at the Sydney Olympic Games in Australia. We need her name. Here's your short clip.
I feel like, you know, I can stand on a start line in the race, feeling very confident with, you know, all the training I've done.
Who's that?
No, I don't know. I don't know it.
An Irish athlete. Guess?
No.
No?
No.
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 No. It's Sonia O'Sullivan. Sonia O'Sullivan. Okay.
Oh, was it her? Oh, Jesus,
yes.
Saturday.
Yeah, she was just, yeah.
No,
yeah.
I didn't think it sounded like her at all.
No, yeah, but it's a guess. You know, it's always worth a guess. Listen.
Okay.
The bad news is you didn't win today. The good news is that you were the second person to get one of our brand new Ray Darcy Show Keep Cups.
Yay!
They're brilliant.
Thank
they're brilliant.
You very much.
Everybody wants one. Since I announced it yesterday, we've had pleading emails and letters and people with placards outside the radio centre looking for them. So you're going to get one. And it's on its way.
Okay, great.
On its way out to in Eden Derry and Offaly. Great talk, D. Dern.
Okay.
Mind yourself.
Thank you.
See you now. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Derek, you are off to one of the iNU 4-star hotels, iNUA.ie, iNUA.ie, to see what's in store for you. Well
That's
done, Derek.
Brilliant.
Good talking to you.
Much.
Bye now. Bye.
Cheers.
Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now I'm joined in the studio by 16-year-old singer-songwriter Joseph Ryder from Wicklow. And Joseph's going to be performing at the annual Remembrance Run this Sunday in the Phoenix Park. How are you doing, Joseph?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. So we're going to hear you sing in a moment. But first, let's find out about the background to the song.
Mm-hmm.
It's dedicated to your grandfather.
It is, yeah.
Tell us about your grandfather.
So my granddad, he's always been my inspiration musically. And that's kind of why I wrote this song about him and the time around after he died. And it's very fitting that I get to perform it on Saturday because he was very into athletics as well.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And he would have been really good friends with one of the organisers of
The Remembrance Run.
Yes.
And tell us about the chats you would have had. What was your grandfather's name?
Tom Curran.
Right.
And almost every interaction we had would have been some way music related. So like he would have been showing me songs that he liked or playing music or trying to convince me to play the guitar and stuff like that.
Yeah. And Saturday is the name of the song.
It is, yes.
So just give us a little bit of a story about the song.
Okay, so the song is about kind of right after he died, and you'll hear in the chorus the lyric, "I never thought today would be the day," and that's basically that he had a long sickness, that's how he died, and it was kind of just that I knew it was coming, but I never thought it would actually happen, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. The long goodbye, but still when it happens, mm-hmm. It's a shock.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
So Joseph Ryder singing Saturday, dedicated to his late grandfather, Tom Curran.
Waiting for a sign, I'll never be ready to say goodbye. I think it was Saturday, sometime in June. Yeah, I knew you were sick, but I wasn't a fool. Gave me your best. Now I think in hindsight that I knew it was sacred, so it never felt right. It was only a drop in a wide open sea, but I loved you a lot. It was too much for me. When you say he's gone, to say I never thought the day would be today. It's been almost 2 years, guess I'm late to the party. I hate how it felt like we only just started. I held her hand as they carried you out, and it felt just the same. I can still hear the sound. Oh, goodbye.
That was brilliant.
Thank you.
And live. People need to know that.
Yeah.
And the first time you performed on live radio.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, well done. Well
Thank
done.
You very much.
And good luck on Sunday performing that song at the annual remembrance run in the Phoenix Park. Joseph will be singing Saturday on Sunday in memory of his grandfather, Tom, who has inspired you to be the musician that you are.
Yes.
Thanks very much, Joseph.
Thank you.
You can head off there because we've Coleman Nocter coming in. How are you doing, Coleman?
Good, thanks, Ray. How are you?
That was good.
Brilliant, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
What a voice.
Fantastic.
What
yeah.
a voice. Great timbre, so natural as well. Good to see you.
And you.
So you were writing today about homework, before we get to our problems, and your children were told they had a week.
Well-being week.
Right, homework.
Yeah. Homework free.
Do you know what struck me immediately? Was that
the admittance that it's a well-being issue?
Exactly, yes. Like if you need to cancel homework for a well-being week, well then just cancel it for a good and all time. So what difference did it make to you in your house?
So the direction was just do things that would enhance your well-being instead of homework. So it was a word okay. as well. But from the point of view of, it made a huge difference, right? So we've all, our kids have different things on every night of the week. So it's gymnastics, soccer, all that sort of stuff. So there was no cramming homework before you got to do that. So therefore, it was unrushed. We watched the Champions League match one night. It was really enjoyable. We had a movie in the middle of the week, which would never usually happen. But it was the whole tone of it. When they come home, the homework has been dragged out. Everyone's like, and it gets the whole grumpy tone going. Without that, it made a massive... I couldn't believe the difference in the just the atmosphere around the house.
Because it creates it creates an atmosphere between you and your children.
It does.
Early
because,
on in
Because you're the enforcer.
Yes,
and you're
yes.
I'm just in the door. I'm just I'm sitting down. But if you leave it too long, then you have to get them out of something that they're enjoying to do it. So you played around with all those things. But the issue is, it just made me rethink that, you know, and I've spoken about this before, there is no research in the world that says homework has any benefit.
Right.
It has, and we just say all the non-academic habits and gets it. No, there's no research to back that up either, right? So the issue is, like, any decision that you make, I've no issue with homework being done. If you want to finish out something really meaningful, important, do that tonight. But making a rule that at the start of the year, four nights a week, we will have to give you something makes absolutely no sense. And there's a guy called Alfie Cohn, if you can get a chance to listen to his view on rewards, punishment, but he calls the homework myth. And he has scoured every piece of research. Even now in secondary school, it's a little bit
different,
dodgier. But from the point of view of primary school, there's no evidence. And so we're choosing to ignore the evidence and go on with this thing that the evidence of the negative impact is really clear, but the negative possible. And like, what I can't understand is why we can't rethink this. Do you know, it's almost like...
But it's a classic case of, like, why was it introduced in the first place?
As a punishment, I think, initially.
You see, And if it was, well, it doesn't make sense that it continues.
But you see, it's interesting, the reaction to this has been fascinating because lots of teachers coming on saying, I agree with you, right? But it's parents, and the parents who feel that if their child is doing something, some learning is taking place. Do you know what I mean? Even though it's filling out worksheets or something, you know, and you know, I heard a story of a child crying, filling out their well-being homework. Do you know what I mean? Which kind of tells us a lot about where we're getting that wrong.
You will do your well-being homework!
Write out what makes you happy, for God's sake.
Yes.
But from the point of view of, you know, the idea that, and again, it's not, I'm not saying that we need to throw it out. I think there's a way, there's a value in rethinking it. Now, the Department of Education says you can opt out of homework. It's not compulsory. But the ramifications for you and your child, if you're the one... Like
as a parent, you can opt out.
Yes.
But as a teacher, can you opt out?
I think, yeah, it's school policy, I think, from that point of view. But teachers would say that parents would be onto them saying... Our children are falling behind because they don't have, they're not getting homework. And that's the myth. that it's actually making any difference at all. Do you know what I mean? And I just think, like, if we wanted a kind of a meaningful change, we need to sit down and do a cost-benefit analysis of it and see...
Particularly
for primary schools. And again, introducing it as they approach secondary school, possibly.
Yeah.
But the idea of sending the 5 and 6-year-old in to do a bit...
But it says it all, really, that it was part of Wellbeing Week. Did no homework. That says it all, really.
And it worked.
It worked.
The collective well-being of our house was fantastically different because of it.
Okay, so we said you were coming in and we got some queries for you. So we'll go at those now. Dear Coleman, I hate to be the one giving out about my child, but thought I might just ask for some advice. I've a 10-year-old son, an only child, and he's become obsessed with football, watching, playing video games, collecting cards. He never stops talking about it, wants a fantasy football team, but isn't allowed. He used to be into music and reading, but now it's just football. He knows every name of every player on every team, but it's all he wants to talk about. I'm driven mad. Even homework involves incorporating football chat into whatever he's doing. My husband isn't really big into football. I'm not sure where it's coming from. I feel he nearly looks down on us for not knowing all he's talking about. What can I do? Is it just a phase? It's been slowly getting more intense since the summer. I don't want him to exclude his pals who aren't as into it as he is, or be seen as a know-it-all either. D.
Nothing to worry about. I mean, again, children have obsessional interests and they change. They move from Thomas the Tank Engine to this. And so this is the phase he's going through. And lots of children have a kind of an anorak interest in football. You know, the match attacks thing, so they know all the stats, but they actually mightn't know anything about the game as such.
Yes.
I wonder about when, like, just because your family isn't interested in it doesn't mean that he shouldn't be, you know. And, you know, whether he'll grow out of it, I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
No, you know, I still haven't grown out of mind.
I suppose Dee is worried about what he's left behind as well, isn't it? Like music and reading.
And those things might sacrifice while an obsessional interest happens, but they'll return. The issue with the friends is interesting. I wonder if he's moving from one friendship group to another and maybe leaving the bookie kids into the kind of sporty, and this is his way of trying to create a connection with those
ingratiate
other...
Ingratiate himself into the new crowd, yeah.
So again, I would let this unfold. I certainly don't think it's anything to worry about. And, you know, it might be something else in 6 months' time. It might change to something else. You know what I mean? From that point of view. But again...
The problem is, I know men in their 50s who...
that's what I said. I don't know whether you grow out of it or not. But I think the anorak interest in the stats and all that sort of stuff tends to loosen up as they get older. And they might... I wonder, does he play the game?
And what's the science about? Because it seems to be not exclusively male, but mainly male.
The obsessional interest
bits?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, children by their nature are collectors, and men are more fond of collecting than females. It's more a convenient hobby. I have to have them all, hunter-gatherer. I don't know whether that's a part to it. But, like, you know, it's known that children want the full set, and they kind of have, again, that kind of anorak academic interest in something. And again, that tends to be more a male thing as well.
But nothing too much to worry about for Dee.
Absolutely not.
Okay, which is great. Coleman, it's a problem I'm sure you've answered before, but now it's our problem at home. My 6-year-old son is wetting the bed. He doesn't like to talk about it. He often waits so long to go to the toilet that he won't make it. I hate having to put a pull-up on him going to bed, but that's where we're at. I've tried talking to him about it. He was fine until the last year or so. He goes mute. He's not a troubled child at all. Very happy, if a little shy. His big brother taunts him a bit over it, but we've had a word with him to stop. Any advice, Elaine?
First of all, nip the big brother issue in the bud. I'd have more worries with that. I mean, that's not something to taunt about. He needs to be having more than a word. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And that's not allowed. This is common. Again, you know, he's still very small. My message with this is reward effort, not outcome. So if he does all the things he needs to do, like not drinking too late, tries to use a toilet before, whether he wets or not is not the, that's not the, the end goal. The end goal is that he does his best to try not do it. Oftentimes it can be linked to kind of some sort of psychosomatic stress going on in the day. Sometimes it's not. But again, I would just keep trying. It'll come good. Like, it doesn't tend to last that long, and they find a way around it. But protecting his self-worth through it is much more important at this point than actually mastering it. But effort over outcome. Once he's doing it, you know, people say, I'll give you something if you stay dry for 6 nights or something. That's never going to work.
Right.
It's not about...
Because people see that as a reward system.
Yeah, but it's outside of his control. Yes. He's asleep when it's happening.
Uh-huh.
So he can only manage his adherence to the preparation to make it a good night. He can't influence the outcome. And that's why you don't get frustrated with it, or you don't get annoyed if it's wet in the morning. It's just, if he's doing everything that he can, he gets full support for that.
And it will pass. I know everything, you can say that about everything, but you know, it happens and people move on.
9.5% of cases out of 10 will be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Maura has been on. Hi, Colm. My child refuses to eat properly and drinks water for snacks. If she gets one good meal a day, she's lucky. Have tried a variety of food, but it doesn't work. Any tips, please? And this is a perennial as well, isn't it? Children and food.
Yeah, I always take the less is more when it comes to food. The more of a battle, the more of a struggle with control you make over food, the more of an issue it sometimes can become.
I know that's difficult, though.
She's not having any kind of physiological impact of that. You know, if she may be snacking and grazing, but maybe not eating what we would like them to eat. Again, trying to create variation in the palate is good if you can get them to agree to it. In this situation, it's more about rewarding her if she tries a new food rather than, you know.
But how do you do that? What reward?
Yeah,
is that a sweet? You see, that's a.
No, I wouldn't be replacing a treat with a good thing. But, you know, again, it's kind of, you know, children's praise, you know. And again, getting back to the earlier issue about rewarding and, you know, with stars and all this sort of stuff, you know, saying, I notice you're really trying there means an awful lot to a child. You know,
good
if you recognise it.
Good girl, yeah.
Well, the good girl, like, they're not fond of that because it's supposed to be like some sort of controls, compliance, to people
so
please.
So what words should we use then?
I notice you're making an effort there. Okay, I know how hard that was for you. I know you're doing that something really hard for yourself there.
So it's an acknowledgement.
It's acknowledgement
sort of
and an empathy. It's just a validation of it rather than this is the way I want you to behave, you know, because...
And good girl, they see through good girl and good boy as sort of patronising.
Yeah, well, you see, there's a kind of a school of thought that it's people-pleasing, you know, so you're training someone to be compliant, you know, in terms of achieving the stars and the prizes and, you know, this is how I want you to behave or this is what I want you to achieve, you know, from the point of view of standardised tests and things like that. That's, you know, you can question everything, but from the point of view of... There's a school of thought that just acknowledging effort is really, really good. Like, and saying, you know, you spent 10 minutes on drawing that picture. Fair play to you. Do you know what I mean? Rather than saying that
it's
picture
good,
is good
or
it's bad.
Yeah. It's the effort, not the outcome. So
100%.
That's a good mantra. Yeah. That's a good mantra. Colman, thank you so much. And you can read Colman's piece on homework in the Examiner. It's up online as well. Thanks, Colman Nochter. That's it from us. Cormac is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.